And good morning. Welcome to Health Essentials. I'm your host, Dr. Roy Morgan. I tell you what, there's not enough time in the day where I can look up every article and dig into it that I want to read about. And the whole purpose of studying anything is so you can learn and you can grow and you can in turn use that information to help other people. Well, what I want to do is I want to share a couple studies with you this morning, and I'm telling you, these are huge. And I don't know of anyone listening, unless maybe you're a child or a teenager, this may not be so relevant to you, but for the rest of us, this is a big, big deal. Okay. This one article that I found right here, and I'm gonna try to preface everything so you can follow me on this, but I'm actually going to read the abstract to you. This comes from the American Journal of Epidemiology, and it says it's copyrighted 1998 by the Johns Hopkins University School of Hygiene and Public Health, volume 148, number 5. Okay, here's the title of the article. It says donation of blood is associated with a reduced risk of myocardial infarction. And to me, this is one interesting study. So as I go over these numbers with you, just kind of listen, and I'll try to emphasize the parts that I think are important. Okay, so what we're doing is we're talking about a mineral or an element that's found in large quantities in the earth. It's called iron. Well, you've got to have some iron to produce energy, to magnetically grab onto oxygen and carbon dioxide and transport it. That's what your red blood cells are made of. What do you think gives them a red color? It's the iron. Just like that's why Mars is called the red planet, probably because of the iron content in the soil. Okay, here's the abstract. Because high body iron stores have been suggested as a risk factor for acute myocardial infarction, that's a heart attack, folks, donation of blood could theoretically reduce the risk of lowering body iron stores. Okay, you get what I'm saying here? If you donate blood, you rid your body of excess iron that is going to rust inside of you if you don't. I mean, I kind of see this all day long. I see people that are stiff and with arthritis, and they're rusting. Their body hurts all the time because they're rusting. Okay. For this reason, the authors tested the hypothesis that voluntary blood donation is associated with a reduced risk of an acute myocardial infarction. In a prospective epidemiologic follow-up study in men that live or come from eastern Finland. I think Finland is the neighbor of the Soviet Union, right? The subjects are all participants of the Kuopio ischemic heart disease risk factor study. Okay? A cohort of exactly 2,862 men aged 42 to 60 years of age, so they were between 42 and 60, they followed them for almost 9 years. Now, they made the notation that out of that 2,862 men, there were 153 of those men who had donated blood in 24 months preceding the baseline examination. And so there was one man out of 153 who experienced a myocardial infarction or an acute heart attack during the years 1984 to 1995. Whereas, we're going to compare that with, there were 316 men, that's 12.5%, so the one man that had the heart attack out of those 153 that donated blood, that was 0.7%. So 12.5% of the 2,529 non-blood donors, they had an acute myocardial infarction. I'm telling you, that's huge. You know what you break it down to? When they do the statistical analysis, that means if you donated blood, and I'm looking for the numbers, but I think it was just one time in 24 months, there was an 88% reduced risk of having a heart attack. Folks, you can't make that stuff up. That is huge. And why is that? Why isn't this on every billboard as you drive up and down the highway saying, not only do you radically save lives and help people that are suffering, but if you donate blood, what you're doing is you're helping your body not catastrophically fail when it comes to a heart attack. Can you think of any drugs that would lower the risk of a heart attack like one blood donation? That's 88%. The answer is no. And see, that's where I think we've been fed so much information. And I do this all the day long. There are some people that are really, really curious. When I say curious, they want to read, they want to study, they want to know more about it, they'll ask questions. I'll try to write everything down for them that I can. Usually I have to rewrite it so they can read my handwriting. I have doctor handwriting, by the way. But they want to know. And I love it. I love it when I can figure out what the issue is, and they in turn can go research it and study it. I think the issue is when you start doing your own research and you start doing your own investigation and you study a topic, you've got to have that filter on that tells you you can't allow yourself to be so down and negative because of all the negativity that you read. It's like, I don't know, let's just say Epstein-Barr is one example that came up this week. If you go onto YouTube and you start watching videos of people saying, your life is over, you'll never get out of bed again, you'll be exhausted the rest of your life, say goodbye to your family, well, that's going to be kind of down and dark and morose. But what we got to do is we got to find a way through this, and you can't be dejected from the goal, which is to restore your health. And so in this one study, 88% reduction just by one blood donation. I think I read another study that said that equaled to 1 year, but I could not. I mean, if you gave one donation per year, 88% reduction in a heart attack or occurrence of a heart attack. I mean, come on. Can you top that? Do you know of any drugs that can claim that? I do not know of anything that could do that. That is just absolutely incredible. Okay, point number two. All right. This is one that I just came across. And I'm reading this, and I'm going, is this really true? Okay. And this one, I'm so sorry. I could not copy off the exact references to give you all of it, but I just have like the short and sweet version of it, or the abstract. There was a study that was done that was called the Copenhagen City Heart Study. And what they did was they studied thousands upon thousands of the residents of the city of Copenhagen for years, which is, in a way, it's very similar to the Framingham study that's super famous, where they looked at the residents of Framingham, Massachusetts, and they followed them since the 1940s, trying to figure out, well, what's happening to those folks? Okay, one research group looked at this Copenhagen study, and they looked at all the data on almost 9,000 people to determine the relationship between ferritin. I don't know if you've ever heard of the term ferritin before, but it's like a super simple blood test to order. Every physician, nurse practitioner, nurse, physician's assistant, you need to be ordering this test on every single person, especially above the age 40, maybe even 30s. I've seen that. But you need to order ferritin. Ferritin is a very interesting molecule. It kind of gives you information about how much iron you're holding in reserve. And so in this study, in the Copenhagen City study, 9,000 people, and all they did was they looked at two things. The relationship between ferritin, which is iron that your body is holding on to or in reserve, and then death rates. Okay? So that's all they're looking at. They're not looking at anything else. They're saying, we're going to plot on a graph we're going to measure ferritin, and then we're going to look at who dies. I know that's kind of morbid. Sorry about that. Let me just break down the numbers to you. This right here is so interesting. So if you had a blood test done recently where they've measured ferritin, you might want to go grab your labs or go to your MyChart, punch in your password, and just look at it. It says here from this study, people that had a ferritin rate of greater than 600, which I'm telling you right now, that's a high number, dude. And you're probably thinking, well, that's impossible. There's no way that mine could be high. Well, how do you know? How do you know your ferritin's not high? So people that had a ferritin of greater than 600, they had a median survival age of 55. Do you think 55 is old? Okay, what that means is, if they have a median survival age of 55, that means that those that had that high of a ferritin rate, 600 or above, half of those people were dead by the time they were 55. I don't like the sound of that. Now get this. Out of those 9,000 people, if the ferritin rate was between 400 and 599, they lived an average of 72 years. Okay, are you with me? So as ferritin went down just a little bit, so above 600, half of them died by 55. 599 to 400, they lived to 72. Are you with me? At the number 200 on ferritin to 399, so that's just basically 200 to 400, the median age was 76. And if the ferritin level was less than 200, these are the people that live to be 79. Isn't that interesting? I'm telling you, I want to take and run with that. Now, let me read this to you right here. This may not seem like it's related, but I really think, and here's your reference point. And so there are studies now that show that if you drink either coffee or green tea, I think everybody listening probably knows what green tea is. You could go to almost any grocery store, health food store. If you buy your stuff online, you could look for green tea. As a matter of fact, you can even look for organic green tea now. And I think everyone listening, they know what coffee is. Well, let me tell you the reference point here. And I'll read the abstract to you. But here's what I want you to think about. I don't have the numbers right in front of me, but I think I remember them. I can go ahead and look it up. I just forgot to mark them. So if you drink coffee, say with a meal that has iron in it, like a cheeseburger, the ground beef would have iron. But if you drink coffee with that, or if you drink tea, especially green tea or even black tea, you greatly reduce your body's absorption of the iron. So even though the steak that you're eating may have a boatload of iron in it, but if you drink coffee or tea with that meal, either black or green tea, it prevents your body from absorbing it. And this may prove to be a very good thing, because the studies I just read you, they were looking at the amount of iron that you're holding in reserve, and the more that you're holding on to, the quicker you die. Of course, this is like a very deep conversation here. I'm not trying to make it super complicated, but if you just look at the condition of the healthcare of America and the healthcare system and the occurrence of all the diseases that we have in spite of the healthcare, you would have to come to the conclusion that we're not doing so hot. I mean, diabetes is completely out of control. Degenerative diseases are out of control. Autoimmune diseases, they are completely out of control. Let me see, what else could I mention? Cancer, totally out of control. And so let me read this to you right here. This is about coffee and green tea. And this is an abstract about what do you do about the microcirculation. These are the smallest blood vessels that you have in your body, such as capillaries. But this is where all the action takes place. This is the delivery system for all the nutrients that your cells and tissues need so they can be radiant and vibrant and they can live. Because without microcirculation, how do you deliver oxygen to a brain cell. Okay? Actually, that's one of the latest theories right now about Alzheimer's, is there just such poor circulation to the brain, you can't deliver nutrients to the brain cell. But then again, on the way out, how do you get rid of all the metabolic waste and the carbon dioxide and the cellular garbage and sediment that your body picks up? You can't get rid of it, you're going to have a problem. Okay. With the changes in microcirculation affecting the liver due to aging in mind, and they're just talking about probably somebody that's prone to a fatty liver, it is interesting to note that coffee plays a role in reducing liver stiffness. I'm going, okay, this has got my attention. I mean, I have felt tens of thousands of livers, and it's pretty easy to determine which ones are stiff and they're hard, and they are just pumped full of fat. That's called a fatty liver. Okay, so drinking coffee, it was discovered through the ongoing prospective population-based study known as the Rotterdam Study. As part of the study, 2,424 people participated in transient elastography. I like that term right there. I have never seen one of those tests done, but it makes you think how stretchable, pliable, or elastic is the liver. Okay, so they did two things. They did transient elastography, and they did ultrasound. And they also completed a food frequency questionnaire. That's probably where they picked up on coffee consumption. The researchers discovered that liver stiffness measurements were decreased with coffee consumption. Oh my goodness. I know this is going to disappoint just a ton of people listening right now, but believe it or not, drinking coffee might actually prove to be very beneficial. And so participants consuming herbal teas also exhibited lower liver stiffness. Hey, let me tell you something. If you don't like the taste of water, why don't you start making herbal tea all day long and drinking that? It was concluded that 3 or more cups of coffee a day or herbal tea was linked to lower liver stiffness. Can I just tell you what I think that means also? You have so much better blood flow through your liver. When you have better blood flow, when it's less stiff, that's one of the keys to life. You can only be as healthy as your arteries in your body. And since the liver is full of blood flow, it's incredible. You want it to be soft and pliable and elastic and supple and bendable, as opposed to hard, stiff, rigid, crusty. You get the gist of it. So there's an article demonstrating that coffee and herbal tea actually plays a role in keeping your liver in good working order. So it's not like I'm always negative against coffee, but I do think there's a point where if you drink too much. But the main thing that I think is from reading the previous study about iron, that's one thing that coffee does. It inhibits the absorption of iron. If you're a man, this might be a really, really big deal for you. Now here's a second one right here. This one to me is very impressive. Do you know what green tea is? Its scientific name is Camellia sinensis. So drinking green tea for 2 weeks improved forearm endothelial dysfunction smokers. Okay, I'm not here to pick on anybody today, but I think most people realize when you smoke cigarettes, it does not magically enhance the flow of blood in the body. No. If anything, you have reduced circulation. So green tea in smokers helped improve blood flow. Oh my goodness, that is like crazy good right there. All right? But the other thing is, you've got to understand that if you donate blood once a year, that leads to an 88% reduction in having an acute myocardial infarction. Well, how could that be? Well, you're getting rid of the old rusted iron from your body. And so if you drink coffee or green tea or herbal tea, okay, there's something that you can start to do today. If you've never had green tea, well, why don't you find some green tea and see if you maybe you can get like an herbal blend. You know what I like to do? I just love pomegranate powder. Not everybody does. And the other ones that I'm kind of, I don't want to say addicted to, but I like them. I mean, they just taste so good. They sell what's called organic lemon juice powder. But I like it because they don't put any chemicals in it. There's no sodium benzoate. There's no chemicals that act as preservatives. It's just dehydrated lemon juice powder. I love the stuff. And it's so easy just to scoop it out and put in a cup of herbal tea. The two teas that I like the most personally, I know this is kind of a waste of time, but I love green tea, and I especially, this is my most favorite of all time, it's hibiscus. If you didn't do anything else today, if you just looked up hibiscus tea health benefits, I think that you're going to be quite impressed. Okay. There was another article, and I don't have the numbers for you. I'm so sorry, because I kind of scanned over it. They showed also that the really dark chocolate, you know, the kind that has the 85% cocoa, those polyphenols found in that really dark chocolate, not everybody likes that, but some people really dig it a lot, and so that's easy. Instead of eating milk chocolate, which is really just sugar, and see, that's one thing that I've learned, that sugar greatly increases how much iron builds up in your arteries. And here's what I want you to think of. You need to think particles of rust that are just slicing and cutting your arteries up. That's what leads to high cholesterol. It's not because, and actually, if this is really a deep topic, but I can't imagine anybody telling a person not to eat eggs for breakfast because your iron levels don't really go up high when you eat eggs. They really don't. So what I'm saying is, in a roundabout way, that when you eat eggs for breakfast, you're doing your body a huge favor from preventing iron from building up. If you're ever, I saw this the other day. I was walking through the parking lot. I always park at the far outside edge because I just want to walk it in. I mean, I need to walk anyway. But there was a gentleman walking into the store at, did I already say Walmart? Can I say that on the radio? Of course. And he had Crocs on, but I could look at his lower legs, and they were extremely swollen. I mean, if I put my thumb on the shin bone, yes, he would have had pitting edema. But the point I'm getting to is the lower legs from just beneath the knees and down, they were kind of this rusty and red color. You know what I mean? And what that is that's rusting. The body is full of rust. That's almost always what you have with diabetes. Of course the gentleman had diabetes, but that would be one of the end-stage signs of it's just way out of control. So is that because they're drinking too much coffee or green tea or consuming blueberries, strawberries, raspberries, garlic, herbs and spices like turmeric and ginger and chocolate? All those things have been shown to lower iron. And that's one of the problems with diabetes is you get this huge buildup of iron and you can't make it go away. I mean, if you keep on your same course that you're on. Now, I came across this article this week. I think I copied this off or printed off last Sunday because I wanted to make sure I stayed it. Another reason why I copied this off is this is information you're not going to just hear anywhere. Okay, do you know what COVID-19 is? Of course you do. What are you doing, living under a rock somewhere? You've never heard of it? I'm just joking about that. But you know how devastating it is. It is a real deal, so I like reading the research that comes out. And I don't remember any expert on COVID discussing this information at all. I mean, there are some. But I mean, the talking heads from the National Institutes of Health and the CDC... and all the agencies that try to tell us what to do. I haven't heard any movie stars talk about this right here. But what they're doing is, this is so interesting to me. They have found out now that basically the greatest predictor of all time on who's going to have a rough go with COVID-19 and who's going to have it easy is just one factor. That's ferritin. Did you know that? You may not have heard this before, but one of the points I'm getting to, I know I'm just dropping little bits and pieces of information here, but when you have too much iron in your cells in your body, guess what? You're rusting out. Listen to this right here. This comes from a... there's just no way I can read all this to you. This is just a... a retrospective study that included 147 confirmed COVID-19 patients in the town of Changsha, which is the non-epicenter of China. Okay. This is not Wuhan. So what they're doing is they're just, let me just go through these right here. I'll read some of them to you. They've got a, like a great table that I can look at. But they're just looking at the association between baseline variables and also disease severity. So I know that you've heard of people getting COVID and they died. They did not recover. Well, let me tell you what they found. These are the differences right here, okay? And so age, those that had it most severely, they were average age 52. But that was all the way from 29 to 78 years of age. Those that were had the non-severe form, they recovered from it, they were average age 40. Okay? There were, man, when it looks at the severity of it, though, let me just read this to you. There's a type of a white blood cell called a lymphocyte. This is the first thing on this study that stands out to me. Lymphocytes are a very specialized type of white blood cell, so if you go to the doctor, I just personally think that every doctor or nurse practitioner or nurse should request a CBC with a differential. It gives you so much good information. The information is so rich. I love it. But one of the markers they can look at is called a lymphocyte. That is a very specific type of white blood cell. That's a cell that you have in your immune system. It's in your arsenal. What does it do? It specifically likes to go after viruses. That's his job. It has a specialty. It doesn't so much go after bacteria and fungus and cancer cells, but what it's good at is making sure that viral infections don't take over your body and destroy you. So you want to have plenty of lymphocytes. And so to me, the first thing on this chart is, it looks to me the non-severe cases, they almost had double, not quite. I'm fudging a little bit on that. But they almost had twice the amount of lymphocytes when they got through the COVID versus, well, the people that had the most severe COVID, they had the least number of lymphocytes. Okay? The next one that catches my attention, and this may not sound like a big deal, but have you ever heard of a type of a thrombocyte called a platelet? It's a very unique type of cell in the body. They're called platelets. Well, platelets are incredible in the work that they do. They kind of call the shots in the blood, and so if they find there's a problem like an infection, they start sending chemical messages back to the bone marrow and the stem cells and the thymus gland saying, hey, we need some help down here. Could you please help us out? Send some more warriors or white blood cells down here like lymphocytes and help us get out of this jam. There's a viral infection trying to take over. And so those that had the least severe problems with COVID, they had more platelets than those that had the roughest go. Okay. Well, to me, that sort of makes sense. Anytime that you have less of what you need to get the job done, well, something's going to go undone. Could you imagine if you're chronically dehydrated? Well, what do you think is going to magically happen? You're going to wake up dehydrated and say, oh, I feel so excellent today. I can't wait to get up and get to work. No, there's a lot of stuff that just can't work right unless you properly hydrate the body. Does that make sense? So there is a Goldilocks just right number. So let's say that 68% of the cell should be composed of water. Well, something's not going to work right if it's 64%. It's going to have a reduced in performance. And so those that had the roughest problem with COVID, they had low levels of lymphocytes. Their platelet levels were lower. I can tell you right now, I'm looking at the chart, the liver enzymes, ALT and AST, they're higher than those. They're in the normal range on average. Some of them were super high, but those that got through COVID with not too much of a problem, they had lower liver enzymes. Okay. Oh, here's another one right here. This one just jumps out because this one's probably almost three times higher. There's a marker in the blood called D-dimer. D-dimer kind of refers toward the tendency of clots to form in the blood. But D. Dimer was so much higher in those that had a rough, rough go, devastating go with COVID. Okay? There's an enzyme, lactate dehydrogenase. That's what you see that goes up when you got cancer. It was like a lot higher in those that had a rough go of COVID. Have you ever heard of a marker called C-reactive protein? That's one of the best markers of all time to kind of give you a clue as to how much inflammation do you have in the body. You know what? There's a pretty good indication. If you're exhausted all the time, if you're super stressed out, if you don't sleep at night, or your sleep is abysmal, and you have no energy, and you hurt, and you have sore joints, there's a chance you're swimming in an ocean of inflammation. I just thought that lady yesterday was so funny. She walks into my office, and she doesn't make direct eye contact with me, but she's talking as she's walking. But anyway, she was looking for something. But as she's walking away from me, she said, oh, by the way, my knees don't even hurt anymore. What she was saying is that I was right. Anyway, sometimes you have to come to terms with it. There's a reason why your body hurts. And so if you have a lot of problems, most likely you have inflammation out of control. I've always really clung to Dr. Russell Jaffe's definition of inflammation. It's called a repair deficit. You have to remember, if the human body breaks down at a faster rate than what you can repair it, well, what does that mean? That's why you have all these horrible symptoms. But if your body can repair faster and better than your tissues breaking down, or at least keep it at equal level, you know, a cell dies, but you replace it with a new healthy cell, that's when you don't have any symptoms at all. That's good. That's what you want. Now, here's the whole point of this whole study right here. This is astronomical. Guess what the number one predictor of all time is of who is going to have a super bad deal with COVID-19? Has nothing to do with who was vaccinated or who wasn't vaccinated. That has nothing to do with it. It's ferritin. This is one of the most unique studies, and I meant to copy off two more that said the same thing. But folks, if I'm not mistaken, you know what? Your fortunes are going to rise or fall based on your ferritin levels. Just like I read you the information from the Copenhagen City study, the people that lived absolutely longer than anybody else had a ferritin level of 200 or below. Well, what do you think you should take away from that? Well, the other takeaway is people that had ferritin above 600, half of them were dead by 55. You can't tell me this is not a huge deal. When your body holds on to old, rusty iron, your body's going to start oxidizing. That means you're going to start rusting. Let me tell you what the ferritin levels were. You're not going to believe it. It's just astronomical. Even I can't believe it when I look at it. Oh my goodness, this is like the greatest gift from God to be able to cover this information. At least I think so anyway. Because then the question begs is, okay, now that we know this information, what are we going to do to improve it? Well, they showed the average amount of ferritin in the people that died and had that never recovered from COVID. It was exactly 733.1. That's just the average. Those that had the COVID, but it was non-severe, it was 296. Now, the other study that I forgot to copy off, oh my goodness, they showed that they could predict who was going to get really, really sick or who was going to recover. And they said the number at ferritin was 264. So if you don't have any other takeaways from today, from what I've just talked about just briefly, you got to remember to ask your doctor to do a ferritin test. This is huge. The bottom line is, if your ferritin levels are high, like in the hundreds, you have got to get those down. Well, what's one way to get those down? Well, the most effective way of all time. There's not many things that work as well as this. And so let's just say the average person that's alive right now, they have about 5 liters of blood. I asked the phlebotomist the other day, I'm just making conversation with her, Because she was telling me about her education and, you know, her work history and stuff. And I always find that real interesting. And she told me, you know, what she liked most. And to me, I always like knowing what a person really enjoys doing, what really gives them true satisfaction. And there's some things that give me a lot of satisfaction. And a lot of them have nothing to do with money or other accomplishments, but I get satisfaction from very, very good quality work where people get great results with their health. But what she was telling me was, I asked her, I said, okay, how much blood are you taking right now? And she said, I'm taking exactly 500 mils. And that's roughly a pint. The little bag from where she got the blood was just like completely filled with blood. It took exactly 6 minutes. It was so fast. It's just unbelievable. No pain, no suffering. It was a piece of cake. But I asked her, I said, how much blood is in the human body? And she goes, oh my goodness, I don't even know. I said, well, are you going to Google it real quick and look it up? And she said, well, maybe, yeah, in just a little bit. I sure will. I said, well, I'm going to ask you the next time I talk to you. But I was reading, and it said the human body holds about 5 liters of blood. Yeah, that's a metric system. And so what they're doing is when they draw off, when you go to donate blood, they're drawing exactly 500 milliliters, okay, about a pint. And so theoretically, I was trying to look at the studies on this. So let's just say that your ferritin level was way too high at 300. Well, if you give one, that's what a blood donation is. You're actually donating 1/10 of the blood that's in your body. You're giving it to them. But they're doing you a huge favor, because what you're really doing is you're greatly reducing your ferritin levels. I mean, yeah, that's the reason why I brought up herbal teas like hibiscus and especially green tea. And that's why I also brought up coffee. There's a reason why they greatly improve blood flow and circulation. Okay? Chocolate, too. Pomegranate. I tried to look up a study on ginkgo biloba this morning, but I couldn't find the markers I was looking for. I did look on Wikipedia. Wikipedia had absolutely nothing good to say about ginkgo biloba. I mean, you would think it's a waste of time to even look at ginkgo if you listen to Wikipedia. Well, what if they're wrong? What if they don't have all the information? That's why it's good to do your own study. Find out for yourself. And so if you give a tenth of your blood, you're lowering your ferritin levels by about 10%. So if your ferritin is 500, you're giving up about 50 points on ferritin. Now we're talking about moving your health in the right direction. Remember, when ferritin is 600 and above, your average lifespan is 55. Okay? I don't know how old you are right now. Maybe you're 20. Well, it would be a really smart move to see the writing on the wall and start thinking about, what am I going to do to maintain the health of my body? You know, there's a lot of people that I take care of that are self-employed. And for some of these people, they are the only employee they have. It's truly a small business. If you want to call them entrepreneurs, that's fine. A lady I talked to yesterday, I think she has 1, 2, 3, 4 different jobs that she does. But she sees the writing on the wall, her physical health. That is exactly her only ticket to continuing to raise her family and to provide for them. Yeah, I think the family unit is completely dependent on the income that she generates so they can have a roof over their head and so they can provide food. And you know what children need? They need clothes and shoes, right? Of course, kids need a lot more than that. They need a strong mother and father working together as a team. Sometimes it doesn't work out that way, but you do the best you can with what you got, right? And so, do you get where I'm coming from this morning? That if you want to have good health, then you can't allow iron and rust to build up. Now, the other studies that I meant to copy off, again, I couldn't get it all done, are the correlation between developing Parkinson's disease and high levels of iron. You want to destroy your body's production of dopamine? Well, rusted iron is one of the best ways of doing that. And so this is one of the most amazing ways that our bodies age, and we don't even realize that the root cause of it. Some of it's because people are eating way too much sugar, because when you eat a lot of sugar, it rapidly increases the absorption of iron from your food. Whereas coffee and green tea and the dark chocolate, like the 85% cacao. So if you were to go to Breaking Bread this afternoon, you may want to load up on the super dark, dark chocolate. Are you with me? Okay, so what have we learned today? If you want to live, think about donating blood. Now, I realize there's some that can't, and there's a lot of reasons why they can't. They have a whole list of criteria on those they just can't accept the blood for. For the rest of us that can, you should. The phone number here at the station is 903-586-5257. That's 903-586-5257 if you want to call and ask a question. Okay, here's a different angle on the same topic. Let's go to the phone lines. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Dr. Morgan. I was wanting to, I went and did what you told me 4 months ago, and I'm feeling great.
Good. Way to go, dude.
Well, the first time I did it, they checked the iron. They said, we can't take your iron. They said, wait a second. We'll check it with the other hand. And they said, oh, it just barely fits. So we...
Wait, what? Now, what do you mean? What number? Were they looking at hemoglobin?
Well, they take a test of your blood, and they put it in a little machine, and they said, your iron is too high.
Yeah, exactly.
It was over... They said 20, and I don't know what that 20 means.
Well, that just means you're full of a lot of rust, and it needs to come out. So that's what you did. They did take your blood, though, didn't they?
They went on the other hand, and they said, oh, okay, now it's below the normal, you know, the level.
Oh, okay, good. Well, you know what? What can we learn so far from what you're telling us? First you don't succeed, try again.
I had to push them because I had a false positive of something that wouldn't take my blood, and I kept pushing them. They finally did, and now they said, hey, come back every 6 weeks or something of that nature. Nonetheless. But the point is that I went ahead and gave it this time. They took it and they said your iron levels are now down to 16.
Oh, that is so good. Way to go.
Well, I'm doing everything you're saying. I'm drinking lots of green tea. I took those herbals that you had suggested.
Yeah.
And bought a big container of pomegranate powder. And so I'm just sharing with you in the audience that, look, you know what you're talking about. This stuff really does
help.
Well,
do you feel better?
I feel so much better.
Oh, look at you. Good job, man.
The only thing I have to keep doing, and you said this a couple of Saturdays ago, about you need to walk at least 20 minutes every day. Is that what you said?
Well, at the very least. If I had my fantasy world, everybody would walk an hour a day. But you do what you can.
No, but
you're working on this, aren't you?
I am.
Oh, I'm so proud of you. You're trying to rejuvenate. I tell you what, you're just doing great, buddy.
Well, I'm just out of curiosity, on lipocytes that you were just talking about, I went to my primary care physician as well, and he ordered blood work. Can you order blood labs, Dr. Morgan?
Yeah, as long as I have the order form in front of me. So any lab that you go to, as long as I have their order form, I can check off ferritin levels, homocysteine. I could do like a lipid profile, anything that you need, I can do it as long as I have the order form.
Well, he writes it out on a script, you know, on a prescription form, and that's what I took in. But rather than, he's even said, all right, you don't need to come back and see me unless something's wrong. Not that I don't, but I want to have...
No, and that's one way of doing things, but I know for a fact that is not the way that you want to do things. You want to be a little bit more proactive and get ahead of the curve.
And that's why I want to come to you, because you explained to me when I brought in my blood work, you explained to me, oh, this means this, this means watch this level. And I really appreciate that.
Well, thanks a bunch. I appreciate you a whole lot.
Well, I brought some of my friends and family to see you. we've only had truly very nice success, and thank the Lord for having you in this program. But he did the lymphocytes. He did a CBC.
Exactly.
And one of the things I'm looking at my my chart right now, and it said that lymphocytes are 27%.
Well, that's not the lymphocytes at 27%. That's not actually the abnormal range. It's just the lower end of normal.
So how do I improve that?
Well, you're on the right track, and that's probably one of the things I just didn't really flesh out real well, that if your body is holding on to too much iron, it's okay. What clogs up every system in the body, from energy production to brain function, diabetes. So as your iron becomes lower and lower, one of the things we're going to see is you'll probably tell me, oh, my goodness, it's easier to lose weight. I have more energy now. My blood sugar is technically lower.
Right.
I wake up more refreshed. So all the markers of health improve as you start getting the rust out.
What is the percentage that should be on lymphocytes?
On the lymphocytes? There's a range. It depends on what your body's dealing with. So if you were dealing with like an acute viral infection, the lymphocytes could easily go up to the upper 40s and the 50s. But I'd say somewhere in the 30s is a good range. But the marker that I want you to think of is your ferritin. F-E-R-R-I-T-I-N, ferritin.
Well, I used to, before I came to see you, I used to take an iron supplement.
But you don't anymore, do you?
I do not.
You avoid that like the plague, don't you?
Yes, I do. And you said the best way just what you said today. Don't give blood.
Yeah.
And do it on a consistent basis. And you shared with, nonetheless, I'm trying to do it. He didn't order a ferritin test. When I gave blood, they gave that number, which I don't know what that means. What's over 20?
Well, what they're doing is they're looking at hemoglobin, which is they're looking at this protein that grabs onto iron. That's what gives red blood cells their red color.
Yes, sir.
So when yours was at 20, that means the blood's pretty thick. And so 16 is still too high, but if you just keep on this course...
Okay.
You're heading in a very good direction to get your iron level. So when you went back the second time to give blood, it went from 20 to 16, right?
It went to over 20. I'm going to say it was 24.
Oh, yeah, and that's just astronomical. I'm not saying it to make you feel bad, because I don't want you to freak out over that.
I already knew it was too high.
Well, I mean, sometimes you're kind of left with, okay, I can't think about something I can't change. I'm just going to go and do it, and we're going to find out how my body responds and heals.
Right.
So good job. Yeah, and so as that number goes, so what I want is, just like I said in that Copenhagen City study of over 9,000 people, when ferritin was above 600, the average mean lifespan was 55. When you start getting it below 200, that's when people start living easily to 78 and above.
Awesome.
Now, personally, I'd like yours to be around 50 on the ferritin.
Awesome. Okay.
So at least you got something to kind of aim for now. So if you want to eat meat, the best meats for you, and I know this sounds kind of weird, but I'm still going to tell you anyway, you probably want to eat meat that doesn't have a huge amount of iron given your circumstances. So that could be...
Well, you told me to eat salmon. At least
exactly. Twice. There you go. And even there's even other forms of fish that would be very good for you too, like flounder, halibut, stuff like that. Besides, you're a multi-zillionaire. You can afford to go to Alaska right now and catch a large halibut and ship it home, right?
Well, I'd love to go back, but no, I'm not. So,
you probably have some responsibilities for keeping you right here at home for a while.
I do. I have my... Doctor, what I was wondering was, when I go to CPL Labs to get my... I'm self-insured, so I go ahead and I pay for everything out of my own pocket. I have insurance. And so I go to these places and pay up front. But what I was going to say, and it saves you a lot of money, by the way.
Yeah, it does.
Can I ask them for an order form?
That's as simple as it is. Just do that.
I see.
And then I can check off, we're going to measure ferritin levels, or we might do a comprehensive metabolic panel and then do a lipid profile, or we might do homocysteine. But, yeah, those are easy to do.
Well, since I just had my blood work done, what's the best way for me, and obviously I'm going to pay for this, to send you my lab results, pardon me, to send you my lab
results? Even if you came in, it's so easy for me to just look at it while it's right in front of me. It's not like I really have to study it a lot.
No, I know that.
I can just look at each marker and say, this is probably what this means. But, man, from what you're telling me, this is like a phenomenal turnaround. Way to go.
Well, thanks to you and thanks to God. I mean,
let's give all the glory and praise to God.
Absolutely, sir. Absolutely. All right. Well, then what I'll try and do, I'll call you sometime this week and set up an appointment. It's a wellness exam. I want you just to look at my blood work results and see.
Yeah, and if something comes up that maybe is a little off here and there, I'll tell you what that means. And so if you need to make a slight modification of what you're doing, that's good. That's a good thing.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for your phone call. Really appreciate you.
You bet. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
God bless.
God bless you. Well, that was so kind. I don't know that I deserved all that. But so thank you very much for your kindness. The phone number here is 903-586-5257. Good morning. Welcome to the program.
Yes. Good morning. How are you, Dr. Morgan?
Oh, I'm so good. Thank you.
Good. Well, I just have a couple questions for you real quick regarding my husband. He recently had some lab work done for an annual visit with his doctor, and his cholesterol went up a good bit to where she had prescribed some medication and also suggested a 81 milligram aspirin daily, and it just made us kind of nervous, of course, to take medication if we can avoid it. So my question is, some things that we can do to help with that, your opinions on that. I'm a nurse, and so I try my best to provide him with, you know, good information. And he's changed his diet a good bit, and so we're wondering at what point should we hold off trying to see if there's improvement with his diet before we start the medication, or is it concerning where we should take the medication, you know?
Exactly. Let me read this study to you real quick. It is noteworthy that scientists know that copper deficiency increases oxidative stress in our body. Leslie M. Clevley, MD, in a series of key studies back in 1973, 75, 1977, 78, he demonstrated that copper deficiency causes the rise of oxidative stress that is naturally met with an increase in cholesterol production in the body. And so, that being said, this is what Dr. Clevley said. In another way, high cholesterol is a clinical sign of high oxidative stress, and that is a clinical sign of low bioavailable copper. I know I'm just selecting one small snippet from an article to read to you, but I really believe with all my heart the number one issue that we have to focus on when cholesterol levels increase, that's a sign that the body is stressed. And when I say oxidative stress, you know what? You've heard of vitamin C being an antioxidant, right?
Yes.
And you've probably heard of vitamin E and selenium being antioxidants, because what they do is they prevent the body from resting. And so if that's all we looked at, I would go from there. Like I told the gentleman before on the phone, if we could just get a ferritin level, that would probably help flesh all this out, because when ferritin levels go up, that's a sign that you're resting. And the only thing that your body can do, or one of the main things your body does to counter that, it increases cholesterol to soak up all the waste. So I know it sounds weird, but you know this as a nurse. LDL cholesterol is literally one of the biggest sponges inside the bloodstream. It's there for a reason. One of the things that it can do, if it's necessary, it soaks up all the toxic rusting waste in the blood. But that's to protect you from damage. And so if cholesterol is increasing, I always ask the question, well, why is it going up and what is it protecting us from? So it can be as simple as what I'm telling you. So I've seen patients before when they had a zinc deficiency. You give them zinc and their cholesterol comes back down again.
Wow.
So, but okay. copper is a huge deal. That's one of the reasons that I recommend liver so often is because beef liver has the highest copper of any food that I'm aware of.
Okay. That helps a lot. I don't believe we've had ferritin levels checked, but his cholesterol and his LDLs were elevated. So his vitamin C level is also very low, surprisingly. So
well, and that's a big deal. Yeah, he's under stress because normally, when the kidneys are stressed, vitamin D levels go down, even if a person takes it. I know that's kind of a weird phenomenon to float your direction, but even if a person's taking a lot of vitamin D and it's still low, that's still a clue that the kidneys are under massive stress. So this can all be solved, and so it may be as simple as if his cholesterol is high. Why don't we give him liver and onions once a week? Or why don't you give him more fish and white chicken for a while? And you know what the name of the game is? You just have to avoid all the refined sugar.
Right.
I don't think that he's drinking. Is he drinking like tons of high fructose corn syrup every day in the form of a soft drink?
No.
Okay.
No, he's having maybe a few a week. But he does have coffee every morning and water, and then he'll have sweet tea sometimes at dinner.
Well, and if we could just take the vast majority of the sugar out of his diet, that would give his body an opportunity to heal.
Okay.
He could actually get his sugar from eating strawberries and blueberries and raspberries, stuff like that.
Okay.
Hey, awesome. Guess what's for lunch today? Fruit salad.
Yes. Fruit salad. That's great. Well, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to call, and thanks for taking my call. I've never
Oh, well, hey, thank you for calling. I hope you have a safe trip wherever you're heading.
Heading to work.
Oh, good. Yes, well, I hope you have a good day at work.
Thank you.
Yes, thanks so much, man. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, there is time once again for one more phone call. It'll be a quick one because I think I have a hair less than 2 minutes left. Okay, good morning. Welcome to the program. How are you?
Yes, good morning, Dr. Morgan.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm shocked that I got through.
You did. You've got about a minute and a half.
All right. About October the 5th, my fingernails started hurting, and particularly the thumbs, and now then I'm losing the fingernails. I've already lost the one on the left hand totally.
Oh, is that from a drug you're taking?
I don't know.
Well, are you taking any drugs?
Yes.
Well, that's the first thing I have to look at.
Okay. On August the 4th, they changed from the, I was taking xylitol, and Dr. McCullough changed it to atenolol.
Okay, that's a beta blocker.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay.
And, but also, I started breaking out with blisters on the hands and the feet.
Well, how do we know this is not a bad reaction to the drug?
I don't know.
By the way, Dr. McCullough is an excellent doctor. He has nothing to do with the beta blocker disagreeing with your body, though. But that's probably what I would do right now. I would just go online and type in, can you start getting blisters from taking atenolol?
I did that, and it didn't show anything.
Oh, okay. Well,
any ideas? Other?
Yeah, you're having a drug reaction.
Okay.
I'm so sorry. I don't mean to be evasive at all.
Oh, no.
But even though you didn't find the answer you're looking for, go to somebody that can test the drug. There's different ways of doing it. But he's given you a beta blocker to regulate and control heartbeat, heart rhythm, and blood pressure. Is that correct?
Correct.
So there's a lot of different ways to looking at this, but if your fingernails are acting up and you've got blisters, I've got to assume there's some reaction somewhere. And I'm so sorry we're all out of time today, but call back and we'll pick it up and where you left off.
Fantastic. Have a great week.
You too. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.